Imperial Leader, the life story of the foremost man of our time, Winston Churchill. Winston Churchill is at his post at the Admiralty, the incomparable leader of an incomparable navy in the world crisis. Europe is on the brink of war in the dark days of July 1914. An Austrian archduke has been assassinated at Sarajevo, and the shadow of a man's hand has darkened the peaceful skies of European summer. The British cabinet meets, disbands, and Winston Churchill hurries home, excited, keenly alert to the tremendous drama now taking shape.
Hello, Winston. How did the cabinet meeting go?
Not badly, dear. How's the boy?
Asleep at the moment. What's happened, Winston?
What makes you think anything's happened?
I can tell by your eyes. They look as they did on the night of the Sydney Street siege. You're excited about something, aren't you?
A little. I can't tell you any more just now, Clementine. I must go back to the Admiralty.
Oh, you haven't forgotten that Herr Barlin is dining here tonight?
Barlin?
Yes, he's just arrived from Germany. You invited him this morning.
Oh, so I did. Well, I may be a little late, Clementine. You can entertain Herr Barlin till I arrive.
You wouldn't rather put him off?
No. I particularly want to see him. He may be able to tell me a great deal. What do you think of the Austro-Serbian situation, Herr Barlin?
Very grave, I'm afraid. I remember old Bismarck telling me the year before he died that one day the great European war would come out of some damn foolish thing in the Balkans. Those words may come true, Mr. Churchill.
What do you think will happen?
It all depends on the Tsar.
If Austria attacks Serbia, will Russia move?
A few years ago, I would have replied no to that question. The Tsar was too frightened for his throne. But today, his position is more secure. Besides, the Russians are Slavs and would feel very hardly anything done against the Serbians, who are also Slavs.
And what of Germany?
If Russia marches against Austria, we must march. If we march, France must march. What would England do?
I think it would be a great mistake to assume that England would do nothing. She will judge events as they arise.
Suppose we had to go to war with Russia and France. And suppose we defeated France and yet took nothing from her in Europe. Not an inch of her territory. Only some colonies to indemnify us. Would that make a difference to England's attitude? Suppose we gave a guarantee beforehand.
I am not in a position to state what England would do, Herr Barlin. But this I will say, that whatever she does will be dictated by only one principle. Peace, if possible, but peace with honor.
Real danger then, First Lord.
Yes, Prince Louis. It might mean war. Has the test mobilization been completed?
Yes. With the exception of the immediate reserve, all reservists have been paid off and are now journeying to their homes.
But the first and second fleets are still at Portland?
Oh, they will remain there, complete in every way for battle, until Monday morning at 7 o'clock.
We have 2 days then before they begin to separate.
More than that. For the first 24 hours, they can easily be reconcentrated. But if no word is spoken up till Wednesday morning, the ships of the Second Fleet will have begun dismissing their balance crews to the shore at Portsmouth, Plymouth, and Chatham.
And 48 hours later still, a certain number of vessels will have gone into dock for refitting, repairs, or laying up. That means we have the fleet in hand for at least 4 days.
When do you expect to hear something definite?
I don't know. I'm going to spend Sunday with my family at Cromer, Prince Louis. I'll see you at 9 tomorrow night. Meanwhile, I authorize you to take whatever action you think is necessary.
Well, what news, First Lord?
The situation is degenerating. First news came through that Serbia had accepted the ultimatum. I went to bed last night with a feeling that things might blow over.
And today?
Austria is not satisfied with the Serbian reply. It looks as if she intends to force a quarrel no matter what Serbia does.
And what of Russia?
Zaltsenov has urged us to declare that our interests in the crisis are identical with those of France and Russia. I understand Grey has refused to do this because Britain has no interest in Serbia.
And because such a declaration might drive Germany into war, eh?
Exactly. The situation is extremely tense and may develop rapidly. There may be a chance of a conference. Grey may yet manage to steer us out of danger. Anyhow, whatever happens, the Navy has never been in better condition or greater strength.
You told me to take whatever action I considered to be necessary. I have, therefore, told the fleet not to disperse. Was I right?
Quite right. And it was only fitting that you should have sent the first order, which may begin our naval mobilization for war.
I will now ask the First Lord of the Admiralty to tell the Cabinet exactly what steps have been taken with regard to the Navy.
On Monday, July the 27th, I sent the following very secret warning to all our commanders in chief. This is not a warning telegram, but European political situation makes war between Triple Entente and Triple Alliance powers by no means impossible. Be prepared to shadow possible hostile men of war and consider dispositions of His Majesty's ships under your command from this point of view. Measure is purely precautionary. No unnecessary person is to be informed. The utmost secrecy is to be observed.
Good, good.
On Wednesday, the 29th, I put into force the precautionary period regulations. Naval harbors were cleared, bridges were guarded, steamers were boarded and examined, and the coasts were put under surveillance.
I may say that Cabinet assented to all this being done. I understand, however, that the First Lord has taken further action on his own initiative.
Not altogether. I first consulted the First Sea Lord and the Chief of Staff, who both agreed with my decision. This was to dispatch the fleet to its war station. I therefore instructed Sir George Callaghan to send the fleet up to Scarpa Flow under his second in command and to proceed at once to the Admiralty. The Prime Minister knew of this.
But why did you not bring the matter before the Cabinet?
Because I feared that Cabinet might mistakenly consider it a provocative action likely to damage the chances of peace.
Very high-handed conduct, surely.
I may say that Lord Fisher was informed of what had been done and expressed his unqualified approval.
Apparently everyone was informed except Cabinet.
That is hardly fair. The First Lord has told you that he notified me of his action in this matter. I approve.
The flagship has since reported herself and the whole fleet well out in the center of the North Sea.
Has the First Lord anything further to report?
No, Mr. Prime Minister. But since so much stress has been laid on Cabinet's assent, I now ask for permission to call out the fleet reserves. The German Navy is mobilizing fully, and we must do the same.
I hardly think such a step necessary to our safety, as mobilization will only affect the oldest ships in the fleet. Our main naval power is already fully prepared, and the fleet in its war station.
That is true, Mr. Prime Minister, but we need the Third Fleet, particularly the older cruisers, to fulfill the roles assigned to them in our war plan.
All in favor of the First Lord's request? Against? I regret, Mr. Churchill, that permission cannot be granted at this stage. We must move slowly and wait and see.
If you'll pardon me a short moment, a question, Mr. Asquith. Is it true that Germany has declared war on Russia?
Yes. The news has just come through.
What action has France taken?
The French Premier has notified Germany that France will do that which her interests may require.
In other words, that she will support Russia.
That is the implication, certainly. Grey has told the French ambassador that, subject to the support of Parliament, the British fleet will protect the French coasts if the German fleet comes into the North Sea.
That means that if the German fleet enters the Channel, we are bound to open fire on them?
Yes.
That settles it, then. I shall give order immediately for the full mobilization of the fleet.
But Cabinet refused your permission to do that.
I shall do so, nevertheless.
It's most irregular, Churchill.
When Cabinet meets tomorrow morning,
I shall take full personal responsibility.
But the proclamation must be submitted to His Majesty. You have no legal authority to call up the reserves.
The men of the fleet will obey first, Mr. Asquith, and demand to see the authority later. By that time, we shall have it. When danger threatens, there is not time to wait on routine. Let's have our walls of steel ready and manned. Let's roll up our sleeves now, ready for any contingency.
Prepare the iron helm of war. Bring forth the lots cast in the spacious orb. The angel of fate turns them with mighty hand and casts them out upon the darkened sky. Prepare, prepare. Churchill is prepared to answer the imminent threat of war. The common people of England are beginning to realize the gravity of the situation. In Downing Street, historic home of Britain's prime ministers, outside the Foreign Office, in Whitehall, near the Houses of Parliament, outside the Admiralty, crowds, anxious crowds, wait for news, hoping for peace, courageously facing whatever may come. And Winston Churchill bravely mobilizes the reserve fleet so that at all costs, Britain will be prepared.